welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam S. Smith, and I'm wasting away in Murderitaville.
Oh, that was very good. I'm Regan Lloyd, and I've been studying in Paris for 2 years.
All right.
Yep. Listen, there was not a lot of female characters to pick from.
It's true, it's true. You don't need to go with a female character, though. I didn't go with character, I went with the Jimmy Buffett song.
I know, but then you'd already taken that, and I had nothing.
Yeah. Last week, I went with something not even related to the show, which was a Humpty Hump lyric.
Oh god, I don't even remember what happened last week. I felt like last week was like a fever dream of an episode.
I once solved mysteries in a Burger King bathroom, which is a reference to the line from Humpty Dance where he says, I once got busy in a Burger King bathroom.
Ah, that's very clever.
Yeah. I'm good at this.
You are very good at this. I am not, as we have very well established by my mystery envelopes.
How are you, Regan?
I'm doing very well. How about you?
Pretty good.
Excellent.
What's new?
Not much. Just like crushing it on the stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do tell.
I was in a burlesque competition and I got through to the finals. So that's very exciting. What about you? Just living your life?
Yeah. Just writing my paper.
Pleb life.
Finishing off my degree. That sort of thing.
That is very exciting.
Yeah. It would be good to get it done.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I digress. What are we doing today?
Well, today we watched Death in Paradise.
Yeah. The first of what I'm going to perhaps uncharitably call old person mystery shows that we've done.
Oh, yeah. I didn't actually know anything about it when I suggested it. It just showed up in Netflix last night.
Oh, you have on Netflix there? I checked here. We don't.
Yeah. No, we do. Well, I guess because it's a BBC show.
Yeah.
And
it's one of those shows... like Midsummer Murders or Murder, She Wrote, where it's very sort of safe and formulaic and just sort of pleasant, despite being about murders.
Oh, absolutely. Like, even the opening credits are like, look at this jaunty thing that we're doing.
It's like
on the beach.
Overlaid shots of police officers raising drinks to each other and also holding magnifying glasses up to things or chasing suspects.
It was definitely like... it's on Friday nights because that's when murder mystery shows are on.
Yeah. It's sort of the summer equivalent to Midsummer Murders, ironically, winter show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you said that there's some particularly savage information on their Wikipedia page.
Yeah. So I was doing some wiki research for the show today at work. So I pulled up the Wikipedia page, putting my work hours to good use. And there's the format section for this show. And it says, possibly the most savage Wikipedia write-up about a show in the non-critical section I've ever read, where it says, I'll just read it. While Death in Paradise has continued to be in the top three most popular programs in British television, critics have called the crime drama unremarkable and an undemanding detective show with nice Caribbean scenery. The show is known for its formulaic approach to its plots, according to whom, citation needed. Each episode is roughly the same in both style and narrative structure, according to whom, citation needed. Each episode begins with a pre-credit sequence showing the events leading up to the murder and often the discovery of the body afterwards. This sequence also serves to introduce that episode's particular guest characters. The police force of St. Marie are subsequently informed of the murder. Preliminary investigations and interviews take place to establish suspects and photograph the suspects. And crime scene are placed on the whiteboard at police headquarters. As the episode develops, more inquiries take place considering the suspects, including background and financial checks. Often towards the end, the lead DI will gain a moment of realization, perhaps brought on by something that someone says or does or by some occurrence. It's just describing what happens in detective shows now.
I was going to say, you could probably apply that to anything.
In this moment, the how, why, and who of the murder, that's a link, the how, why, and who, the five W's, are comprehended by the DI, but are
that's
not revealed
to the
audience.
That's only two W's and an H.
What could the others be? That sounds like a simple mystery. How, why, and who? How starts with an H.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good start for the five W's. Well, we're in the Caribbean, so definitely... are we in the Caribbean?
Yeah.
Wetsuit.
Oh, yep. Watermelon?
Watermelon. Yes.
Wok-tail.
There you go, we got... yeah, Wachtel, yeah.
But they are not revealed until to the audience. The suspects then all gathered and the DI talks through the evidence. Often flashbacks are used to show what happened. The murderer and the motive are revealed in the denouement of the episode. Normally, each episode ends with a comedic scene or celebratory trip by the police force to Catherine's bar. The final episode of each season has included a subplot wherein the lead DI is tempted to return to the UK by the prospect of a job offer or personal relationship, but in the end, he decides to remain on the island. The plot very rarely strays from this general structure, which has now become synonymous with the show. However, it has not always been praised, with some critics believing it restricts the show too much. There's a lot
I get
of,
it.
A lot of sort of backhanded criticism in what should be a fairly standard plot format summary.
Yeah, it's just like, they're valid points, but also like it's not that different to literally anything else.
Yeah. Slow your roll, Wikipedia.
Absolutely.
I wonder if there's a similar thing on the Midsummer Murders page. I guess we'll find out.
I was just wondering that.
The lead DI, surnamed Barnaby, investigates the things.
Every episode, something happens. Someone dies.
Every episode,
he figures out who it is.
Detective Barnaby's wife takes a new interest in a thing, and then a murder happens related to that interest.
Is that what happens?
Not every episode, but it happens a lot. Like, she'll go to the Orchid Fair, and then there'll be a murder at the Orchid Fair.
Has anyone ever considered that she's orchestrating the murders?
I have a joke about Midsummer that I do where I argue that it's a gated community wherein everyone is either a murderer or someone the government wants to get rid of, because everyone in it will either commit or be the victim of murder.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
That's
what you do in
improv.
That's
the response you want for a joke, right?
Improv. You just say yes.
Exactly.
So, Death in Paradise.
Yeah.
Stars our friend Ben Miller.
Is he the one from Worst Week of My Life?
Yes.
Okay.
And
I recognize his face.
In later seasons, he's replaced by Chris Marshall, who you may know as Colin God of Sex from Love Actually.
Yes. I would not have gone with that. I would have gone with the son in my family as the...
Oh, yes, that too.
Point.
My first instinct was actually the guy who makes drugs in Death at a Funeral, but...
All very good. He is a staple of British television.
Mm. But he's not in this for another couple of seasons.
And I don't want to reveal my thoughts on whether this is a hotting up or not, but I don't think we'll get to them.
Look, the thing that I love about this podcast is that I know that if we're ever at the risk of running out of shows to do, we will have basically infinite amounts of British old people crime shows to do.
Oh, you know it.
Midsummer's been going for, what, like 100 years?
About that, yeah. Like, you know, because it's got to keep up with the average age of the people who watch it.
Mm.
I'm sorry for throwing so much shade on Midsummer Murders, but also no, I'm not.
Okay, shall we get into our episode recap?
Yeah, well, who are our persons of interest, firstly?
Oh, good question. So, obviously, Ben Miller as Richard
Playing...
Poole. He's a sort of stuffy English detective who's assigned to work a case on the island. Just one case or something more?
You can really tell a lot about his character by the fact that he shows up wearing a full suit.
Mm. Black in daytime.
That's what you wear when you're on island time.
Yeah. It's very much a sort of fish out of water. There are some light comedic elements to this show, and he's very much sort of a fish out of water, at least in this episode.
Yeah. This was on Netflix under TV Dramedies, which I thought was poorly chosen.
Wikipedia describes it as a light-hearted crime comedy drama television series.
Oh, you know, just some light-hearted crime, because it's so much better than all the... All...
My favourite genre is light-hearted crime comedy drama.
God, you're not wrong.
I was making a joke there, but I think I'm actually telling the truth.
I know, yeah, I was like, that's fun. And I was like, no, that's literally how we started this podcast. Mm-hmm. So we've got him doing his thing.
Yeah, we have, Sarah Martins as Camille Bordy, or for the most of this episode, a mystery woman.
Yes.
Rounding out the cast, yeah. We have a few sort of detective constables or police officers, I guess, general police officers. We have Danny John Jules as Dwayne Myers and Gary Carr as Fidel Best. They're sort of the local cops. They're much more easygoing than Richard is, and that's sort of their dynamic.
Now, is it just me being... as we know, terrible with names.
Mm-hmm.
Or did they just not really introduce anyone at all?
Yeah, didn't
episode?
Do a great job. Had to look up some of the names of people while watching.
Like, notes. I could not even have told you the main character's name.
I got that because I don't know why I did, but I did. Probably because he was being introduced to everyone at some point and got more attention than the rest of the cast put together.
Well, yes. He was really... I don't want to say he was carrying that show as in everyone else was bad, but just... he had like 70% of the script.
Yeah. And also Lenora Critchlow as Lily Thompson.
Who was that?
The lady cop.
Yes. I don't know.
His sidekick this episode, kind of.
Yes. Okay. Good.
And as is generally the case with these shows, there's also a revolving cast of murder victims and suspects and witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
In this episode, they included Rupert Graves, who you may know as the douchey older brother from Death at a Funeral, the novelist.
Is there anyone that's in this show that was not in Death at a Funeral?
All of the black guys, because the UK version of that show was all white. Well, that movie.
That's true.
Shots fired.
Indeed.
Apparently someone called Sean Maguire was in it, but I've pulled up his Wikipedia page and do not recognise his headshot. Lenora Critchlow as... Rupert Graves played Lord Selgwick or something like that. Salcombe.
In this episode?
Lord Salcombe or... in this episode. Did you watch the first episode?
Of Death in Paradise?
Yeah.
Yeah?
There was a panic room.
Okay, I didn't know he was a Lord someone.
Yeah, Lord and Lady Salcombe, or Sarah and James Lavender.
Yeah, I just thought they were rich people.
Okay, they mentioned they were lords at some point.
Oh, God, okay. I need to pay more attention to the television.
Otherwise, how will you know how the peerage is changing over the course of a given episode of television?
How the what?
The peerage. The peers. The aristocracy.
Yeah.
You're in England. This is important for you to know. How will you master social mobility?
Literally, Google Debrett's. It's the funniest thing in the world to me because it like tells you how to set a table from everyone from the queen to paupers based on where they should be sitting because of their ranking.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, it's really fun. And they publish like a list every year of all the best people who are the best and the fanciest. Right. So I find it really funny, but also I hate it.
Yeah,
you know those, you know those
sort
things.
Of entrenched class systems are kind of gross.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so I think those are our people of interest. Anyone else that you remember?
I don't remember most of the fucking people of interest.
Oh, shit.
So.
Hugo Spear was the victim.
I was wondering that when you said you didn't recognise him. I was like, maybe
Hugo Spear? Who is Hugo Spear? Because there's Hugo Spear and Sean Maguire.
Oh, I thought Sean Maguire was maybe the victim.
Yeah, let's check. No, he was Marlon Collins, was Sean Maguire. Who the fuck was that? Not turning up any images for this guy either. I'm just going to assume this character didn't really exist.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's a fair assumption to make.
So Hugo Spear presumably played the murder victim who was the previous police chief.
Yes. So I wasn't sure if he was going to be the main character forever. I guess that's a sort of mislead that they give you, right?
Oh, I had the exact opposite of thing where we'll get into the recap now, shall we?
Let's just jump right in. We segued pretty good.
Because very early in the show, we see him knocking off early and walking away from the police station. And I was just like, well, I guess he's going to get murdered.
Yeah, I think you've also nailed that. Like,
I wasn't going to be surprised if as he was walking away from the station, if we just saw a blackjack fly into frame and hit him on the back of the head or something.
No, that's fair. Sorry that I just get, like, swept up in the majesty of the narrative and I don't think about these things.
That's okay.
So we open. I was not like actually apologising for that also. Good.
We open with, like, a sort of montage of the goofy island life they have, which is kind of patronising.
Yeah.
But
I felt a bit weird about a lot of this show.
It's kind of parochial in a lot of ways. Or is that the word? Paternalistic, that's what I mean.
I think I know what you meant anyway.
I don't know, I feel like and they address this a couple of times in the show, but the idea that like, oh, we need the one white cop to come and solve the mysteries on the island.
Yeah, I like they addressed it, but they didn't do a great job.
They didn't necessarily justify it. But then I guess on the other hand, this does provide an opportunity for, I guess, a greater proportion of people of colour to be in the show than... because of entrenched stuff you might otherwise see.
That's true.
So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Point. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so we open with a sort of montage of sort of laid-back island life where one of the cops is playing basketball with a guy and another one is trying to help a guy reclaim a goat, but he's like, sorry, your time is up. If it was your goat, it would have come to you by now. And so they put the goat back in the cell.
But then we get first like, ho ho, the English police don't get it. Because he's like, you know, it's a goat and it's not going to come if it's cold. And then the other policeman does indeed get the goat to come to him when called.
Ipso facto, it was not that man's goat.
Indeed. But also, the issue I had with that was, if you could get the goat to come to you when called, then you're saying that that's like your goat because you're trying to get prove ownership by getting the goat to go to that person when called.
Maybe the goat is a recurring character and it's like the station pet.
I hope so.
Maybe the goat is like secretly the Moriarty of this show.
I mean, the goat did pop up a few times, so.
Just you wait, wonder that they'll all be dead by that goat's hand.
That's the real death in paradise.
Yep.
Yep.
Just like in the Garden of Eden, when Eve was gored by that goat.
Yeah. Yeah, that one. That old chestnut. Mm-hmm.
She gored herself upon the horn of knowledge, and so God cast them out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That sounded vaguely dirty.
It did, yeah. It did. I bet there's a porn about that.
Anywho, they also arrest a guy who stole a yacht, and he's in the jail cell for the rest of the episode to deliver the occasional bon mot.
What is a bon mot?
Just like a one-liner.
He did do that, yeah.
But I don't want to address him again because he was kind of boring.
He was very boring.
So just assume he's there, and every now and then he says something like, "Oi, I'm not a crook," and then they all turn to him and say, "Yes, you are."
Yeah. But what else?
So that sort of brings us to the end of the working day. The chief knocks off for the day early, and we get some shots of a sweet sort of island manor party.
It does look pretty sweet.
A worried-looking woman is sort of moving quickly through it. She takes a glass of wine from one waiter's tray and then shortly thereafter places it on another waiter's tray as she heads indoors and opens a safe.
Yep.
Okay.
You know I rely on you for the plot synopses.
Gotta be a bit of give and take here.
I know, I'm really sorry. I was expecting it to be a 20-minute episode, not a 40-minute episode, or I would have taken notes.
Oh, I kept track. So. It was a 60-minute episode.
Oh, God. Was it?
Yeah.
That explains a lot then, yeah. Because I was like, oh, yeah, this will be over shortly. I'll remember what happened, but now I don't.
No. Anyway.
Because they also did cover quite a bit of ground in this.
It's true. Now, there's a gunshot that rings out. Everyone freaks out. An alarm starts going off because the panic room has been sealed, so they call the police.
Oh, yes, sorry.
And we get that sort of cheery guitar, ukulele music that we were talking about earlier.
Which is a bit jarring after there's been a murder.
Yeah.
So then the lady of the house rushes in.
Oh, shit, no, I've jumped ahead. We've missed something very important that's happened.
What did we miss?
They call the police station before the credits. And the one of the guys answers, I think it's Fidel, and he tells Lily to go and check it out and open up the panic room because the police have the codes for the panic room, and the panic room can only be opened from the outside. Doesn't that seem a bit counterproductive?
Yeah, I thought so, because I thought
shouldn't it only be able to be opened from the inside?
Yeah, but maybe it's like, I don't know the first thing about panic rooms.
No, neither.
Because I guess maybe from the inside you don't know whether it's safe outside.
I guess so. Though I guess a well-made panic room would have cameras.
Oh, like that movie, Panic Room.
Yeah. So shortly before that call comes in, though, or as it's coming in, Lilia receives a call on her phone with the ringtone, "I shot the sheriff." We don't hear what that's about yet. But then, anyway, she goes and answers the call and goes and opens up the panic room. And everyone's in there freaking out. As she's opening it up, the lady of the house and the lord of the house, who have been missing for a while, both show back up. Making
and that
them
places
the only
them
people
top of my
alibi.
Suspect list. Yes. Yeah.
So she opens it up. Oh my God, the chief Charlie is in there and he's dead.
Who saw that coming? Liam did.
I did. I'm good at this.
I did once the husband showed up. I thought otherwise it was going to be that lady's husband.
Oh yeah. Credits. We've talked about those already.
We have.
Also, that woman stole some documents from the safe, it looked like.
Yes. So now we get introduced to our stuffy white male.
Yeah. He's getting off the plane. I think he's on the phone. He's complaining. His luggage has gone missing.
He's got a very hard life, and that's what you need to know about him.
Yep. Apparently, he's been assigned to investigate Charlie's death because since Charlie was a British cop, they assigned a British cop to look into his death.
I get it, I think.
You know, it's kind of like how in other detective shows, sort of police always want to look after their own.
Yeah, exactly. So that didn't seem super weird, but people are pissed about that decision.
Yeah. Some guy to be put there in charge of them that they've never met just because he's British. That's like colonialism.
Well, that's a... Yeah. So then, yeah, we get sort of... He does the rounds and gets introduced to everyone.
Yeah. He gets the island history about how it was colonized by the French, then passed between the French and the British and the Dutch like a handball, and he's sort of just shy of being openly hostile to this explanation.
Yeah.
So, a rude man.
Just the worst,
does not want to be there. He's very hot and cranky.
And like, fucking, maybe stop wearing a suit then, sir.
I mean, to be fair, he may have changed if he had his luggage.
Oh, that's a good point, actually. I hadn't thought of that.
Although, he is still wearing his suit jacket the whole time, though, so maybe not.
Yeah. At least, like, roll up your pants and... I don't know.
I wouldn't do that. I'd just take my jacket off.
Well, you know, at least, like, take your tie off itself.
Mm. So when he gets in, they've got some evidence for him. He wants to get on the IT network, but that's not going to happen because that's not really a thing there. And also, Fidel stole his computer monitor because his stopped working.
There just seems like a lot of the introduction was just him being like, oh, I'm going to need this, and then people laughing at him.
Yeah, because he doesn't get the way things work around here, man. He's a square.
Exactly.
He doesn't get that we don't have a forensics lab or ballistics or anything, so we have to send away to Guadalupe.
Yeah, and that's going to make it... It's going to slow down the murder-solving process considerably, I would think.
So by the time they get there, he gets there, they've identified that the only person at the party that wasn't on the guest list was this mysterious woman, but they only have a picture of her from the back.
Well, that's not helpful at all.
No, she does have distinctive hair, though, I guess.
I also thought that. I was wondering why they didn't sort of go down that avenue of searching.
There's a moment later in the episode where Fidel and Dwayne are looking at her from the back while looking at her photo, and then nothing really comes of it because they start arguing about something.
Classic Fidel and Castro. What were their names?
Dwayne.
Dwayne, yeah.
Fidel Castro.
I was just putting something together, all right?
Classic Fidel goes west.
that can be the spin-off where he goes to England.
Hmm. Is this perfect. East of England? Like I said, everything is eventually.
Whoa.
Sorry, flat earthers.
Right, where are we in the investigation? Not very far.
No, I think, oh yes, Lily drops him off at home, which is also Charlie's ex-house.
So he pops in and is disgruntled at the state of it.
It's pretty messy, to be fair.
Yeah, but also I think it's just not up to snuff for his posh English standards.
Mm, he's on the phone to his boss. He does describe it as a sort of shack. And then he starts talking about his out tray and his in tray and his pending tray and how he has a tangerine in his desk at home.
Just all of these unnecessary character things.
Mm. And then he gets a splinter.
Which...
Whenever he's not doing serious detective work, it feels like he's one sort of vaguely sexually themed mishap away from being the guy from Worst Week of My Life.
Yeah, that makes sense. Just a bit like, oops, I did this thing because I don't fit in here.
Yeah. Also, he has stupid. Whenever he's in his home, he has this sort of recurring confrontations with this lizard.
This probably really CGI lizard. It was funny.
I liked how at the end of the episode, he learnt to accept the lizard, which showed that he was starting to accept life on the island.
It was a great metaphor, honestly.
Mm. So they go investigate the crime scene, but as they're leaving, we get an ominous shot of that mysterious woman waiting outside his house.
Yeah.
What could that mean?
I think it means the mysterious woman's about to break into his house.
Oh, shit. He should put a lock on that door.
Well, that's not the way things work here.
I just don't understand those island ways.
Exactly.
Also, I don't think he has any glass on his windows, so...
This was so dull, I honestly cannot remember the sequence of events.
They go there, they meet the husband and wife, and also the, I guess, butler or something.
Yeah. So we find out that the husband was off having a cheeky snog with someone who wasn't his wife, and that's why he doesn't have an alibi. They showed a flashback, so I'm pretty sure that's exactly what happened, because you wouldn't show a flashback unless it actually happened.
I like it in, like that in sort of, I guess, comedy shows mostly, where there's a flashback and then...
Someone's like, that didn't happen.
Someone's like, hang on, why did you describe it in all that detail? Like, why did you tell us that she was black? Because if you think about it, the flashback showing all that detail, the idea is that he would be relaying all that information. So he'd be like, I snuck away to have a cheeky tryst with this black woman. It's like, are you racist?
Oh, right.
What's wrong with you?
I see. So we've got that, and then I think the wife is a suspect now.
Yes, because she had...
Apparently that alibi just exonerates the dude.
Because his thing was that he had gone and made out with this woman on his beach, which he owns because he's a lord, and she had seen it, so they had argued, and at the end of their argument, she had ended up covered in wine, so she had gone off to have a shower.
But was it wine or blood?
Dun, dun. That's why I only drink white.
Liam, I've seen you. I've seen you after you've drunk red wine.
Yeah, that's why I don't drink red wine.
Ah.
Got you there.
Listen, it was a rough night.
C'est la perfect crime.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, how are you going to... What's your alibi for murder if you're only drinking white wine?
What do you mean?
Because when you have blood on your clothes, you can be like, oh, no, I spilled some red wine on
me. Oh, shit. Yeah, if I actually commit the murder.
Yeah.
The murder that I've always longed to commit.
Yeah, exactly, that one. How the fuck did we get here?
Some investigating happens.
Yeah, it's like...
Surprisingly, it's all... thoroughly spelled out.
Yeah, they sort of don't leave anything to chance. Except they do, because I finally got to guess a mystery envelope today. So that was very exciting for me.
Likewise.
Because I guess, in a way, like, Luther spells it out more, because they have to be like, oh, I've just realized this. But it's
but so much more. What this show does is it establishes the mystery and then slowly spells out all the clues one by one, giving you the chance to put it together. Whereas Luther just sort of, oh, hey, here's what's happening, and then that's what happened.
Yeah. I'm not at all saying that they are comparable.
No. They're very different shows, honestly.
But they're both made by the BBC, and that's why my head went there.
But this was a British-French production.
Well, my apologies.
Ooh la la. Shall I just run down the
oh my god, please do. I can't talk about this anymore.
Okay. So she and he are the only ones who know the code to the safe. The safe was open. Neither of them claim to have done it.
Apart from the police, apparently.
No, the safe, not the panic room.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Neither of them opened the panic room as well, because obviously the police opened it.
Mm-hmm.
A vase was broken, and he had a book on his body when he was killed.
It was a backpacker's guide to Europe or something.
Some sort of travel guide, yeah.
Was he planning to leave the island? Did the island kill him so he couldn't leave?
Oh, shit. The smoke monster got him in the panic room.
Oh, my God.
And so basically it's a classic locked room mystery, because they rule out suicide because there was no gun found when they opened the room. And so the murderer must have somehow killed him from inside the locked panic room, or, as is always the case in these things, found some way around that.
Well, exactly. But, I mean, how do you find a way around a panic room? That's a pretty airtight alibi.
Shit. Hey. He suffocated to death.
Yeah, exactly. He suffocated to death, and also his body just spontaneously produced a 22 caliber hole, or whatever the gun terminology
22
was.
Millimeter, I think they say.
Yeah, I don't know.
0.22, they keep saying, actually. So he returns to his house. That mysterious woman is searching it. She hears him come in. She hides under the bed. He hears her clink against the bottle, so he grabs a mop.
Because... how else are you going to defend yourself?
Yeah, because he's a fop. He's a cop. Shouldn't he have some sort of truncheon or something?
I liked all your rhymes.
Oh, yeah, I'm a regular Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
That cop is mop. He has a fop. Watch out or he'll... I got nothing.
Cool. Yeah, I got nothing either. Shouldn't he have a truncheon? We're not in, like, 1930s.
They have those collapsible batons, though, these days.
Oh, do they?
Well, some police do.
Well.
So they have, I mean, ideally it's so that, or a taser.
Yeah, that's true.
I think sort of self-defense equipment when you're hunting a murderer.
But all the time, like when you're in your own home?
That's true. Fair point. Well made.
Thank you.
she pretends to be Charlie's cleaner, and he buys it because what the hell does he know?
Well, exactly. And then he has to tell her that Charlie is dead, and she has some very convincing fake crying.
It's a pretty good smash cut there where you haven't heard, have you? Heard what? Smash cut to her blowing her nose in his handkerchief and crying hysterically, if you'll pardon that, my use of that word.
Why do I need to pardon it?
Well, some people don't like that word.
Oh, no, I don't have any issues with it. Okay. But maybe our listeners do, so please pardon Liam.
So she leaves.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the hell's going on? Then he tries to, because he doesn't have his luggage still, tries to put on some of Charlie's clothing. But apparently he only owns Hawaiian shirts.
And that is not a look that our detective friend wants to go for.
I don't think that's a look Ben Miller could pull off, to be honest.
And now we'll never know because he chose not to go down that road.
Hmm. So the next morning they go and accuse, they request a gun and they go and accuse Sarah, that was her name, right? Sarah, of killing Charlie. And she's like, no, I loved him. And they're like, what?
Because she'd been on his boat.
No.
Right? No? God.
He smelled his towels at home and smelled her perfume on them.
Ah, that old chestnut. Yeah.
They find her riding a beach in like a tied-on, checkered shirt and jodhpurs. Did I say riding a beach?
You definitely said riding a beach.
Riding a horse on the beach.
I was like, I didn't even know what I meant to be picturing. Yes.
So gratuitous.
Yeah.
Oh, aren't I rich and young and attractive?
Well, you gotta get your audience in somehow with your sexy horse riding.
I was just speaking about myself.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh so heartily at that. Yeah, basically we find out she's been boning down with the police constable Charles.
Chief.
I was making a joke, I don't remember his name. His name wasn't Charles either, probably.
It's Charlie.
Yeah, but
I'm not really sure what's going on here, Regan.
This show has ruined my brain. Yeah, anyway, so that's a big revelation.
Yeah. Long story short, they get the vase back. He reassembles it. They find out that James, her husband, was involved in human trafficking, and seemingly so was Charlie, because when he tries to have a shower, Richard finds a key to a safe deposit box in his shower head, restricting the water pressure.
Because of course that's where you'd leave your key.
So he and Lily go and open the safe deposit box and find multiple unfilled out passports and cash, which is apparently like perfect people smuggling evidence.
Bags of cash, not just a bit of cash, like some fat stacks.
Oh yeah, gotta have some fat stacks for your people smugs.
Exactly.
For your peeps.
Your smuggies.
You're all like, listen up, fam. Go start a new life in the US.
Exactly. That's exactly how people smuggling works.
Yep. So they go...
This is pretty incriminating, to be honest.
Yeah. Case closed. So Lily keeps pushing for.
Yes. So let's all dust off our spectacles, because if there's 20 minutes left of the episode, the case is not closed.
Jesus Christ. I was so annoyed when I opened the stream and saw it was 60 minutes long. These things are normally like 45 at most.
I know. Oh my God. Yeah, I know we said we would get you to like watch along with us, but don't fucking bother.
I'll do it. It's cool.
No, normally, yes, but this, no. Don't.
So they go and look at this. They go and look at James's yacht.
And who do they find on the yacht but...
The mystery woman.
Slash cleaner.
He's like, you're in my house. You're Charlie's cleaner. Charlie doesn't have a cleaner. Why were you in my house? And then she jumps off the boat and swims away. And then...
He flaps about like a little distraught bird.
Yep.
And is like... yep. And then while the other police officers just take off their radios and dive straight in.
Fidel also starts taking off most of his clothes.
Because, you know, again, got to get those gratuitous shots in, am I right?
I guess so. It was kind of a wide shot the whole time, but...
I know. I was...
So they're swimming after her, and then just Ben Miller pulls up in a speedboat and is like, yo, get in the speedboat, you're under arrest. I say speedboat, it was like a little tinny with an outboard motor.
Yeah, it's generous to call that a speedboat, but...
Sort of a slow speedboat. Like, it goes a speed.
Just a boat, then, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it moves at a speed.
So we get back to the station.
She wants her phone call.
So she gets it because she's not giving him anything.
That one guy who makes wisecracks there is in the background for this whole scene.
Of course he is. What a tosspot.
What do they actually talk about before she asks for her phone call? He's asking her questions and she's just making fun of him.
Yeah, and she's like, is this a formal interview? And he's like, no. And she's like, all right.
And she's like, okay, well then I will go and get you a solicitor. And they all laugh at him because he's standing there in a suit talking about solicitors. Because
he doesn't understand the way things work.
No, he's such a big city type. He doesn't get it.
Not at all.
There's a real sort of slobs versus snobs dynamic in this police station.
I agree.
Anyway, so they decide to go and arrest Lavender for his people smuggling operation. But when they get there, what do they find?
They find him dead on the beach!
What? He's got a 22mm pistol in his hand.
A 22mm pistol, but he said he knew nothing about them.
He did say that earlier, and we did not mention it.
Because it wasn't that important. No,
there was
exciting.
A whole gun-related
like
subplot
this
going
whole
on
show.
Where he doesn't know anything about guns, and also there's another gun in the house, which is a .32, his wife's father's service revolver, which is much larger and louder. And also they were the only ones who knew it was there, and now it's gone.
Someone must have done something with that.
Yeah.
Something untoward.
Something further away?
Yep.
That's what untoward means.
Does it?
No. I'm just being overly literal.
Oh, God, I thought you were like...
untoward? Further away?
Yeah, no, I got it now.
These aren't good jokes, Regan.
I thought you just called me out on, like... national radio.
Oh, on the beep.
Yeah.
Radio 4.
Yep.
I'm Alan Partridge.
Yes, you are, my friend.
Case closed.
Boom. Did it. All right.
Now we're getting to the denouement now.
Oh, God. Thank God.
He reassembles the vase and finds out that there was a gunshot in it. So he puts the vase back where it was and uses a laser. He and Fidel and... Dwayne used a laser to figure out where it went, the bullet trajectory, and then a metal detector to find the bullet. And it was a .32 thing bullet, which means that was used to shoot the vase, and that's the gunshot everyone heard. Because they'd previously established that you couldn't hear the .22 from inside or adjacent to the panic room from the area everyone was when they all heard a gunshot.
Oh, God, they just so much shit happened because they spelled out every point.
We really
of the
need
case.
A more coherent way to run down these clues in this podcast.
We really do, yeah. Okay, we'll work on that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Thank you for bearing with us.
We're experiencing some technical difficulties in our mystery solving currently. Please hold. Do, 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 do.
Why is our hold music Stand By Me?
Why not?
Well, you make a very good argument there. So,
we've
stepped through everything.
We are moments away from the important realization, Ari, who was the murderer. But then...
Because there's always a but then.
Richard's phone rings and it's the people who he's been calling all episode about his missing luggage.
And he's like, not now.
But they him that the luggage never left Heathrow.
And he's like, yes, it did.
But then he's like, oh, wait, oh, my God, I've cracked the case. Shut up, I'll call you back. And then he starts freaking out. And then the other two are standing there looking at him like, has the heat finally got to him?
And then they make some cracks about that.
Mm-hmm. They just stand there sort of wisecracking at him.
Yeah, it's really funny.
While he's sort of waving his hands around being like, oh my God, it was never there. But if it was never there, then that means the ocean. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, basically. He does all but makes his own sound effects.
And he basically all but says everything he says in the next scene, just in fraction sentences.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Just giving the people who are a little slow on the uptake the perfect opportunity to feel like they've sort of cracked the case before the detective.
Because also, if this show's on the beeb, that means
which I presume it is without having done any research. It's on the Abe here.
Well, I saw a beeb logo come up when I started it. But that means there's no ad breaks.
Hence the 60-minute runtime.
Yeah, but I just want... cannot imagine sitting through this whole thing. Like, if you'd gone to make a cup of tea in the ad break and come back and missed a bit, I could get the step by step by step. But no, if you're just sitting there watching the whole thing, good Lord. How did you? Okay. Liam, take us to the money zone.
Bam, 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 bam. Maybe man jokes.
Who done did this murder, my friend?
Who done it and why? So they call, first he briefs Fidel on where exactly to stand in this room so he can have a really cool gotcha moment, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah, because it's so rarely that you get to see someone planning their gotcha moment. Yeah.
And he calls everyone into the accusation parlor, which is just the room in the house where everything happens. So there we have Fidel and Dwayne, we have Lily, we have Richard, and we have, not James because he did, so I guess just Sarah.
Just them?
Sarah as well.
Yes.
Who you would think, if you haven't been paying very good attention, would be our only remaining suspect.
That's a good point. But, and I haven't been paying very good attention, so.
Ergo, take her away, boys.
Exactly.
Oh, Marlon Collins is that dumb guy in the cell.
Oh, of course.
Okay, mystery solved.
We crack the case.
Shit.
Oh, God. It took us a very long time to get there.
Yeah. So, where to start on explaining this murder?
Yeah. Okay, so...
Charlie was investigating... we also learned that woman was an undercover cop, by the way.
Oh, yeah, we did. She trained in Paris for 2 years. That's where I got my opening gag that wasn't funny.
And she becomes the new, like, sidekick character in this show.
But if she becomes the new sidekick, what happens to his current sidekick?
Well, Charlie was investigating James for people smuggling. And he knew that if he went to this party and read this particular book, he could get the evidence he needed. So when he was investigating, James happened to come into the room and see him. So he went and...
hid himself in the panic room.
Because James fired the .32 revolver at him, but hit the vase. Because
he's never used a gun, so he doesn't know how to do it.
So that's the gunshot everyone heard, and then the panic room thing happened. So he...
But then how did he die in the panic room?
A ghost.
Oh my God.
An island ghost
got
him.
That's so fresh.
Anyway, so he walked down to the beach, like he said he did, and he threw his gun in the ocean, and he called his... Oh, the reason that we... Richard... Shit. Why is this so complicated? I feel like the American shows we've done weren't this complicated.
Absolutely not. There is no way. The Beeb expects a lot from its watchers.
It's not... It's just, like, it doesn't expect a lot intelligence-wise. It's just there's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah.
The reason that we never found out that she was an undercover cop, Camille was an undercover cop, is because she suspected that there was a collaborator in the police on the island. Now, we've been led to believe that this was Charlie, but...
And they couldn't tell Miller because what if it was him?
Yeah.
But he's been in Croydon for the last 13 years.
Laugh track. There's no laugh track in this show. Maybe there should be, though.
Yeah, there should be.
Anywho, so he called his confidant. Yep, a complice, confidant in the police, and she got the call moments before, or just as the call to the police was happening, and her ringtone.
She got the call.
Her ringtone.
Does that mean it was Sarah?
I shot the sheriff. Rang out. Very subtle.
I know. I love like. Congratulations to the person who decided what her ringtone should be.
Yeah.
That's some nifty foreshadowing.
It could have only been better if it was like Smooth Criminal or something.
There's nothing better than I shot the sheriff if you're murdering a policeman.
True, yeah. So she
Okay, so
in.
What happened?
She walked in. She opened the panic room like we saw her do. Previously, as is standard procedure, she had cleared the room. So
and
when she
cleared the room, that gave her the perfect opportunity.
She walked in, she pulled out her silenced pistol and shot what's his name in the head. Or the we never saw his body, wherever he was shot.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was in the head. Or like through the throat or whatever. Yeah.
She sort of put it like around the height of his solar plexus and aimed up. So he died. Then she also killed Lavender when they were going to investigate the yacht and threw the silencer in the ocean and planted that pistol on his body that she used to kill
the other dude.
Yeah, thereby framing him for that murder and making it look like he committed suicide as out of guilt. The classic perfect crime.
Absolutely.
But
and
not
yet.
Because Fidel was standing behind her the whole time and cuffs her.
But why does he cuff her? We haven't actually got any conclusive evidence as to how she did this yet, as their boss conveniently points out.
The book was just a travel guide.
Ah, says Miller. No, it wasn't.
Wasn't it?
Well, she swapped the book because she knew that the book would be incriminating to her as well. So what she did was just moved it with a different book that looked the same because, of course...
Got one of those fancy English bookshelves with all those identically bound books.
Yeah, but only one other one had the right sort of spine with no writing on it, which is not helpful on a bookshelf, by the way. Who the fuck decided that?
Yep, so he immediately pulls out that book and it's got blood in it. It's got a bloody fingerprint of hers in it. Take her away, boys.
Book 'em.
Pretty good.
Thank you.
Did we spend too long on this show congratulating each other for our own jokes?
Well, I don't think we spent too much time because it's not often we actually make good jokes. So I think a lot of it is just me going, we're very funny. Yeah, so we've finally reached the end. Or have we?
So why did she do it?
I don't remember.
Oh, she wanted... Well, she was bitter about being constantly passed over for promotion. She wanted to have...
Oh, that's right. I actually alluded to that earlier.
And now it's being given to Richard, and she's really bitter about that, so she's wanted to make some money.
Which, I mean, fucking... I get it.
So she'd get off that dang island.
But she's never going off this island again, because...
No. They're throwing her in the cell across from the goat and...
An annoying quip man.
Marlon Collins. Why
and
does
then,
Marlon Collins get top billing on the IMDb page?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's normally if you've been in more stuff.
Okay, right. And then that thing with the lizard happens where he's finally accepted the island, but he thinks he's leaving. He's happy, but he gets to the station to go say goodbye to everyone, and Kamish tells him that he's been permanently reassigned as the chief there.
Oh,
no.
Dang.
Also, they have his luggage.
Also, that luggage was small enough he could have taken it as hand luggage.
Yeah.
I was really annoyed.
Although, maybe it was a small plane.
Maybe.
He's been assigned his new partner, Camille. They don't like each other. They insist they can't work with each other, but they will.
In one of those classic, I can't work with him, said simultaneously.
Yeah.
And that's the end.
Basically, yeah. Time to crack out the mystery envelopes, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
It was really nice to have a nice sort of low ball right after Luther, just sort of tossed right into our waiting mystery bats.
I wouldn't call it a low ball because I was just plucking a guess out of thin air.
Okay.
To be honest with you.
After you then? Or as the the British-French productions say, après vous?
I mystery enveloped at 27 minutes in, which was about halfway. And I said, it's a dirty cop.
Okay.
So I plucked something out of thin air, but I also done got it right.
Pretty good, pretty good.
What about you?
I did mine at 30 minutes in, and I said it was Lily.
Okay, well, you were more specific than me, so good job.
And my reasoning was because there was that scene where she was talking about, like, oh, you don't think women can kill people? That's a red flag.
Ah.
Her ringtone was I Shot the Sheriff. She was first on the scene at the locked room mystery. And the smoking gun for my case was that when I was doing my research, she wasn't listed in the main cast for the show.
That is indeed a smoking gun.
Yeah. Smoking.
I feel like you had a bit of an upper hand there then, you little cheat.
True, but I didn't look into it any further.
She no,
could have
fair.
Been murdered.
Oh, that's also a
which
good
is
point.
Why I made sure to do it by half time this time.
I see.
Anywho. Now we've come to the almost last segment of the show. We need to decide if we're going to watch this show again, if it's a cold case or if there's a hot lead to follow.
Oh, boy. I mean, I think everyone's on the edge of their seats about how I feel about this show.
Oh, you loved it, right?
Oh, my God. Can we just actually convert ourselves to a Death in Paradise podcast now? It can be called Death in Podcast.
That's terrible.
I know. That was really off the cuff. I'm sorry. That was very bad. Listen, I'm going to put this case to bed, but I don't know. What do you think? You reckon it's hiding up?
Look, ordinarily, I would totally agree with you. But I watched the next episode preview and there were two things that caught my eye.
Go on.
One, it was a murder wedding where I think the bride was murdered. And two, Patterson Joseph was in it. And I'm a really big fan of his.
Okay.
So I guess now we've reached a sort of situation where we need to sort of take turns trying to browbeat each other into submission.
Oh, listen, I'll give it another go, but if this happens again, I get to pick the next three shows. I'll lose choosing privileges. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, that, agreed. Handshake sound. Okay, handshake
sound. Gentleman's agreement.
Mm-hmm. All right, so.
What mystery are we solving this week?
Today, we have a case. It's the case of the Lindbergh baby.
Now, what is this? Because you told me it's not actually a mystery.
I mean, it was a mystery. It's just that it's more or less definitively been solved.
I see.
It's a sort of, you may have heard of it in popular culture, like The Simpsons or various other things, though you don't watch that show.
I do watch The Simpsons.
All evidence to the contrary.
All right.
is famous missing persons case in, I want to say, the 1930s.
Okay.
Where Charles Lindbergh, who was a pilot, I think, one night he heard a noise in his house, which he assumed was a full crate of oranges in his garage, having the supports breaking on that. Then later his maid or nurse went to check on the baby that they had sleeping upstairs, and she couldn't find it, so she asked the mother, who was coming out of the shower or something like that, and she didn't have it, and neither did Mr. Lindbergh. So Charles Lindbergh Jr. had gone missing, and it sparked a national manhunt because Charles Lindbergh was a famous person, and I guess at that time famous people could basically just do whatever they want, which is why, for some reason, he led the investigation instead of the police.
Oh, okay. That's a fun twist.
Yeah. So, do you have any questions?
Yes. So, was he the main suspect but led the investigation?
He was never a suspect.
Never a suspect. Okay. Why did he have a full crate of oranges in his basement?
As was the style at the time, I guess.
I mean, I would never wake up and hear a noise
it was the evening.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
I should also explain that they also, after the police arrived, they found a muddy tire print in the yard eventually. And the remains of a sort of ad hoc constructed ladder in the lawn, in the front yard, or hidden around.
Oh, so someone stole this baby.
Someone stole the baby. Maybe it was a dingo.
Well, yeah. Maybe it was a gorilla, because that is what happened that was a chimpanzee.
Vengeance for Harambe.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Whew. All right, so do we have any suspects then?
The only suspect I really know of is the guy who was executed for it. Do you want me to just walk you through some things that happened that were interesting?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So they received a ransom note, which had, basic standard ransom note, don't call the cops, bring money to location, or bring money when you get it, let us know, and we'll arrange a meeting point. Any future communications will have this symbol that we've drawn on the note here. Which is, I think, a nice manoeuvre by the ransomers.
What was the manoeuvre?
They drew a specific symbol on the ransom note so that other people, because it was a high-profile kidnappy target, they put a symbol on it that other people who were just imitating it wouldn't know, and so they could dismiss any sort of imitation ransomers trying to get in the game.
Ah.
Anyway, the investigation kicked off. The then Bureau of Investigation, precursor to the FBI, sort of got involved. The president was like, I swear to move heaven and earth to find this baby.
And
everything really, really got going. A man who was known as George Frederick Condon, I think his name was, or Corden, who was a retired school teacher and, quote, well-known Bronx personality, sort of ended up taking a lead role in the investigation for some reason.
Okay.
Corden, or Jaffsy, as he was known.
Jaffsy.
His initials.
Right.
That's a good nickname.
Jaffsy, did you miss me?
Good work.
Thank you.
He was nominated to be the official liaison with the ransomers, and he met them in a graveyard in the shadows, but because they are in the shadows the whole time, he could only tell that they had a foreign-sounding voice and he never saw their face.
Okay, all right.
So they arranged, so he was like, I'm not going to, how do I know the baby, you have the baby, or the baby's still alive, I'm not just going to arrange to get you this money. So they sent, then they sent them the sleeping clothes that the baby was wearing as evidence that they had it.
Yeah, that's still not evidence it's alive, though, no, guys. True. Come on.
And in fact, a little while later, a trucker pulled over to relieve himself by the side of the road on some sort of highway and found a dead baby.
Oh.
And it had a sort of deformation of the foot that the Lindbergh baby also had. So there's that.
Oh, dear. That seems pretty damning.
Yep. But that doesn't resolve who did it.
It does not.
Who done it, as they say in the trades. So they did some clever stuff with this ransom, where there were these things called gold certificates at the time, which were sort of equivalents of money, I guess, because they were on the gold standard. And you could, they were sort of banknotes that you could trade in, but they all had sort of registration numbers on them. So they noted they noted down all of the denominations, the numbers of these banknotes, so they could track them when they were used, because you had to sort of sign them.
Right.
And also there was a thing coming up in the next couple of years where the president was going to set a deadline where you had to turn them in and sort of be reimbursed in regular cash or receive fines or imprisonment. So they could track the culprit with that.
Surely, as the kidnapper, you would just refuse the gold notes.
I don't know.
Like, that seems like a very obvious gotcha.
Yeah, maybe they didn't think about it. It's probably a very high-pressure
situation. If that happened
situation.
In a movie... I would be like, oh, no one would do this.
I've seen pictures of them. They look very similar to just regular currency, except they have different symbols on them.
Oh, okay.
They have like a sort of gold thing.
Right.
Anyway, long story short, they found a guy, what was his name? Let me just pull that up. I've forgotten his name. Sorry.
You should be. I expect you to know everything about this case off by heart.
I'm doing pretty well off my top of my head. Oh, over the course of this, this is taking place over sort of several years, and the trail has long since gone cold by this point. Jaffsy continued his investigation and sort of became notorious and increasingly disliked for it, including one, for some reason he would go around dressed as a woman to investigate. One time he was riding
Jaffsy.
A bus and he saw a suspect and announced, quoting Wikipedia, announcing his secret identity, ordered the bus to a stop.
Amazing. No man should have that power.
No. What was his secret identity?
Well, I think that was his real, like, he announced.
Never fear, Jaffsy's here.
Yeah, exactly.
His actions were also criticised as exploitative when he agreed to appear in a vaudeville act regarding the kidnapping. And Liberty Magazine published a serialised account of his involvement in the kidnapping under the title Jaffsy Tells All.
Yes, I love it.
I love Jaffsy.
I love Jaffsy. He's a great character. I want to see the movie about his life.
Anywho, so they found this man, J.J. Faulkner.
No, that was a crook's that was a name fake... if ever I heard
no,
one.
No, sorry, I'm mistaken. That was a fake name that he used to cash in a heap of those banknotes.
Ah. Okay, so he did think about it. Good, good, good.
Yeah. He listed a fake address and a fake name and just exchanged the notes. So I guess because they didn't have computers, you could just do that very easily at the time.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So they found this man, Hauptmann, H-A-U-P-T-M-A-N-N. Hauptmann?
I guess.
Richard Hauptmann was a German man, I believe. He lived in the German-Austrian neighbourhood of Yorkville in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, adjacent to Manhattan, I guess. They searched his house. They found $14,000 of the ransom money.
Fucking hell. How did they find Hauptmann?
Let me check.
Like, how did we get from J.J. Faulkner to Hauptmann?
Okay. A gold certificate from the ransom money was referred to them, because the exchange thing was happening, but some members of the public had held onto them past the deadline. So they were much rarer at this point, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So the $10 certificate was discovered by a teller of the Corn Exchange Bank at 125th Street and Park Avenue. It had a New York license plate penciled in the margin, 4U1341NY. So they traced the bill to a gas station, and the station manager had written down the license plate, feeling that the customer was acting suspicious and was possibly a counterfeiter. So they traced that car, and they found Hauptmann.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. So they found $14,000 of the ransom money. In his roof, in his attic, they found wood, which they had an expert examine and was found to be of the same cut and type as the wood the ladder was made of.
Oh.
They found in his cupboard, penciled on the I guess skirting board or whatever, Lindbergh's address and phone number.
Oh, it's been like years, man. Why didn't you just paint over it?
Yeah. And that's, I think, the crux of their main evidence.
Okay.
Also, he claimed that he got the money certificates because a friend left for Germany and left it with him, then died.
All right, bitch.
Isidore Fish was that person's name.
Mm-hmm. Of course it was.
There's a photo of him.
He's dead now, so you can't ask
him. There's a photo of him on his Wikipedia page.
Oh, amazing.
So he was a real person, at least.
But why did he steal the baby? We don't have a motive, Liam.
Money.
Oh, right. Of course. Okay.
When asked about the writing in his closet, he said, I must have read it in the paper about the story. I was a little bit interested and kept a little bit of record of it. And maybe I was just on the closet and was reading the paper and put it down the address. And about the telephone number, he could respond only, I can't give you any explanation about the telephone number. So there was a trial. He was found guilty and he was sentenced to death and eventually executed. The thing that raises people's ire about it and why it still sort of comes up in contemporary discourse is because he insisted on his evidence until his death, his innocence until his death, and long after his death, until her death in, I want to say, the 70s, his wife continually campaigned to clear his name.
Oh.
And the one thing that I read that gave me pause was they couldn't find any fingerprints of value when they were doing any of the investigating. But there was this person, Erastus Mead Hudson, who was a fingerprint expert who knew the then rare silver nitrate process of collecting fingerprints of wood, and which is apparently more sensitive. And
okay.
He found that Hauptmann's fingerprints were not on any of the wood that they found on for the ladder, even in the places where they would have had to have touched to make it. And upon reporting this to a police officer and stating they must look further, the officer said, good God, don't tell us that, doctor. And the ladder was washed of all fingerprints.
Fucking hell.
And that's basically the Lindbergh baby case.
Wow. There was a lot in that. And that was a lot more interesting than Death in Paradise. Honestly.
Thoughts,
well, I mean,
conclusions.
I'm glad we cracked that. Yeah.
Now, do you have any thoughts or conclusions, I mean?
Oh, do I? Man, I don't know if he did it or not.
I think it's likely, based on the evidence that I've read.
Yeah.
But obviously it's a very cold trail by now, and I'm not a real detective.
Maybe he was wearing gloves when he made the
ladder. To break kayfabe. Yeah. That's also a good point.
Yeah. That's my theory.
Also, the reason they couldn't get any valuable fingerprints, or part of the reason they couldn't get any valuable fingerprints from the scene of the crime, was because everyone just seemed to come over and start touching everything.
That's why you always got to put the police tape up, keep public away.
Yeah. These are the lessons we learn.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, I guess in that regard, it's good that this baby was murdered.
Mm-hmm. What? Yeah. Wait, what? Don't trick me into agreeing with things. Like
I didn't trick you. You just agreed to it because you weren't listening. You
put
weren't
some sort of Chris Angel mind freak on me to make me agree to baby murder.
No, it's not at all good at all. And I think if it was directly related to stopping people from touching evidence, it would be noted in the Wikipedia article because Wikipedia is savage but true.
True. Anywho, should we wrap things up?
I reckon. Our theme music is In the Crowd by The Years. You can catch us on Twitter.
At Mystery Twins DA, or email us at MT Detective Agency. Just send us feedback, suggestions for shows to do, cases for us to discuss. I think it's would be a good idea for weeks where we don't have anything, any listener requests for things to talk about in that regard. If we did things like we did this week, where we looked at cases that are perhaps famous in pop culture or things like that.
I love it. Yes. I mean, I guess that's what we did with the Zodiac Killer, but we just did a very bad job on that one.
True, yeah. We're refining this process as we go.
Yeah, exactly. We're just a little fledgling little baby podcast.
Yeah.
Flapping around like an angry bird.
An angry bird on an island.
Trying to get our eggs back from pigs. That was not a thing about cops. That was a thing about Angry Birds, game. Okay. Yeah. I just, in case anyone thought I was being mean, I'm not.
I made a joke about calling cops pigs last week, if you recall.
I don't, because this show has erased my memory, because it feels like my whole life was spent watching that one episode of Death in Paradise.
Oh, I feel like I'm really going to earn your ire next week with
this episode. No, hopefully that was just because I felt it was very expository.
And you will be prepared for a longer episode next time.
Exactly. I'll be prepared. I'll take notes. There'll be a murder wedding, so I'm looking forward to that in the nicest way possible, because it's about fictional people, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Anywho.
Sweet. Yes. Please do some nice things on iTunes for us.
Or Stitcher. We're also on that, I think.
Have
I done that yet? If I haven't,
I don't know. Well, until next week, friends, don't buy any yachts.
Hustle always wins. We're not really twins.
Bye.
Bye.